Subcommittee on Ways and Means, Education Subcommittee, Thursday, June 15, 2001, 10 o'clock a.m. in the main room.
What's going to happen to any individual county that has a tremendous outbreak of a contagious disease, whether it be tuberculosis or whatever? The potential is, each individual could cost $50,000 to $60,000, each individual. And to sit here and work this plan out, but not have some out of the county who are suddenly to be looking at their entire general fund. Most counties are, I don't know, 5 to 10 million in the general fund period. With nothing in place.
Education Subcommittee of the Joint Ways and Means Committee, and on our agenda today is a work session on 5051, Community College Budget, and a public hearing and work session on Bill 466A relating to the Columbia Gorge Community College District. And I want to reverse the order a little bit and open the public hearing on 466A because there's some effect on that on our 5051. And so, see, Senator Perioli isn't here yet. Representative Patty Smith here. Oh, yes, Patty. Welcome. Yes. Did you? Oh, no, that's okay.
That's okay. We won't wait.
Yeah, right. You are as important as any senator. So
thank you. Very good to hear. For the record, I'm State Representative Patty Smith, District 56. I'm here to testify on behalf of Senate Bill 466. Senator Perioli and I brought this bill because we need this enabling legislation and funding for the annexation process of Columbia Gorge Community College and to access for the county. So I have lots of letters of support from the city of Wood River, and what they want to do is put this on their ballot, and they need the legislation in order to go ahead with it. So it's important that we get that through. And Dr. Bill Bell is here from the president of the college, and I'm sure he can go into great detail on it for you. But I'm here just to ask for your support.
Right. Any questions for Resident Schrader?
What's the local contribution going to be for this? How do you know?
You know, could I ask Dr. Bell to come up and maybe he can help us with this?
That'd be fine, yes.
Yep. Okay.
Okay. Welcome to the community.
Thanks very much. Bill Bell, President of Columbia Gorge Community College. The present tax rate of Columbia Gorge Community College is 27.03 cents per thousand. So this proposal would be to extend that tax into the part of Wood River that would be part of the new college district. Cascade Lock currently is in Mount Hood Community College District and also in Mount Hood or in Wood River County. So they would not be part of the annexation effort. They would stay with Mount Hood Community College.
Okay, further, anything else you want to tell us about the, yeah, tell us about the proposal and what it does, what it changes.
Well, Columbia Gorge Community College has had a long-term relationship with Wood River County, and we have delivered limited services through the contract out of district arrangements that exist in the Oregon statutes. And Hood River County is the largest area in the state of Oregon now that's not in a largest population in the state of Oregon that's not in a community college district. And there's been a citizens committee formed in Hood River to look at the needs of community college services, and they advanced this legislation and need and support the legislation, and had planned on having an election to elect or to cause this annexation to take place in May, and decided because of this legislation that enables them to have credibility with their taxpayers about what's going to happen and under what conditions it might happen and what tax impact might be on the citizens, they wanted this legislation to be passed before they initiated a campaign to have a local election. So the election was changed from May to November in hopes that the legislature would be adjourned by then and that the bill would be passed, and they could go out and share that legislation with the citizens so that the people in Hood River County would be informed and knowledgeable. There's all a broad base of support from the city to the port, the county, and a campaign will be planned to be mounted and will run a November election.
Questions? Yes, Director Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. At the risk of sounding naive or not educated here, Section 3 appropriates general fund money, and there's a blank there. Is there a number to be put in there?
Hello, please. Can you answer that?
Just to say there, and members, LFO would recommend, would receive information from the department on the cost to Columbia Gorge of establishing or extending their services in Hood River County. And we agree with the department that the figure appropriate cost for that would be $942,000. No, it is not. This is funding to support the community college's enrollment in the second year of this triennium, and an estimated 300 enrollments in Hood River, as well as certain startup costs and costs for the election. This is what in the past, this is what the legislature has funded when a community college district annexed additional services.
Senator Schultz, Mr. Chair, I didn't see this $1 million, almost $1 million, any place on anybody's list. And so I'm just wondering, where does the $1 million come from?
Right, Senator Schultz, that's one of the things we'll be considering when we look at the budget. You know, there's $45 million in the governor's budget in the community college. That was for enrollment and growth. And so it could be taken from that, and we'll hear from the association.
This college is going to get some of that money. It's just use the money it's going to get to do this. It's going to get.
Could you answer that, Doctor? If we put the full $45 million into the 17 community college districts for growth and enrollment, what would you get from that?
The College Board met last night, and we talked about this, and we are committed to the $45 million goal for enrollment growth, and the money that we're talking about here, approximately $1 million, would be the $46 million that we might go to community college, or some amount that would be above the $45 million. We're committed to the enrollment growth.
So, you didn't answer my question. How much will you get of the $45 million?
We get about $400,000.
$400,000. That can be used for the same purposes of asking for the $945 million?
No. If without the $1 million above the $45 million, I think what we would support would be if we get the $1 million above the $45 million, we'll take it. We'll be happy, and the citizens of Hood River will start receiving services. The compromise might be that we have enabling legislation to take place that would allow the election to take place in Hood River in November, and then we would come back to the emergency board and ask for funding to operate services within Hood River County.
I think we need to consider that seriously, because as you said, Senator Cho, and I didn't see it from anybody's books, so it would be an additional $1 million of general funds, and that would be very difficult at this time. So can we, we're just going to be in a public hearing on the 51, but can we work that bill to accommodate you, what you just said, about having the election with some sort of legislation having been passed that they can go to the emergency board?
I think that would work. We're committed to the $45 million going for enrollment growth. We'd like enabling legislation to allow us to move forward with the annexation, and we'll seek funding through the emergency board at a later time.
Senator Cho,
I think we could do it that way. If we're not going to encumber the $45 million, then that's going to be distributed among the community colleges. It would mean then if they did have the election, came to the emergency board, they would ask for emergency funds. And whether or not that co-chairs are comfortable with that or not, I don't know. That's what would happen.
Yes. Right. Other questions or comments?
Yes, sir. But without the additional funding, the annexation would not take place.
And we'll also understand, in order to have funds available, if you go to the e-board, you have to appropriate those funds specifically to the e-board.
I guess the question is, why could the annexation, or why can the election go forward, and would only occur, obviously, if the legislature, next legislature, perhaps appropriated $1 million as part of the ongoing growth model for the college system. That could happen.
Yes, questions? No, thank you very much. Is there, Senator Perioli isn't here yet. Representative Smith, is there anyone else that's been working on this bill?
No, not that I'm aware of. I just wanted to say there's a real need out in the gorge in District 56. I don't know if you're aware of, but in Hood River County, Hannah Lumber's closed, and we need facilities for retraining. We also are the home of the Oregon Veterans Home and the Dallas, trying to get the nurses training there to get the, to be able to go full capacity. So if the need is there, it's very specific, and anything you can do would be greatly appreciated.
Okay, we are in public hearing on this, and we don't have a sign up list, but I think it'd be appropriate for Andrea or someone from the your association to come testify if you'd like. We're not okay, don't need to. Is anyone else that feels compelled to testify in the public hearing on this bill? Not close the public hearing bill and open the public hearing and work session on House Bill 51. And see, this is a work session. We can call anyone up that we need to, but so give us LFO's recommendation, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I've distributed to each of you a packet of material in a paper clip that has a blue sheet on top, and I would like to go through that blue sheet just to explain what the subcommittee is being asked to do today. We're being asked to consider a final recommendation on the community college budget for the 01-03 budget. What this memo indicates is just to remind you of the actions that you've taken so far on this budget, because there's been considerable time since you last considered it. You held a work session on this budget, which was then, by the way, held in Senate Bill 5506. The co-chairs have asked that you use House Bill 5051 as the vehicle instead of that Senate bill, solely for the reason that to equalize the workload of the two houses at this point in the session. Most of the bills that have not been passed are still Senate bills, so this will help even that workload out. But in any event, you held that work session on March 8th, and you made a number of decisions at that time, and I just summarized those in those three bullets at the top. You approved technical adjustments and reductions that were required under the co-chair budget direction. You approved the program cutback contained in the governor's recommended budget, and we'll be talking about those, and identified preferred candidates. You were asked to approve them at that time, and you did. However, you identified certain candidates that you wished to have funded if additional funds became available. The record will show that the subcommittee identified student-based funding, which is the term that is often called, being used to term enrollment growth, as you mean the same thing. The student growth funding as its priority add-back, if there were up to $45 million in additional funds available, and restoration of the governance program cut, if more than $45 million were to be available. I'm mentioning this to you for information purposes only. The subcommittee now is not bound by that earlier decision. Finally, you deferred consideration of a package that was in the governor's recommended budget for $45 million $1 to finance student-based funding or enrollment growth. That is to say, to finance additional funding that would be distributed to colleges through the community college support fund for their general purpose budget. At this point in time, this is the situation that the subcommittee is asked to consider. There are additional funds now that you are not allowed to consider on March 8th. The co-chair's budget does include an additional $45 million of general funds above what we had approved on March 8th. But to clarify, this is the same amount that was in the governor's recommended budget, the student-based funding. And basically, dollars that you have today are the same as the level in the governor's recommended budget, except for those technical adjustments that you made on March 8th, you know, the standard cuts you made, and that sort of thing. What the subcommittee has been asked to do today is to decide how best to utilize the additional $45 million available for this agency under the co-chair's budget. And there are three alternative uses to decide among. One is the funding of the enrollment package, the student-based funding package. The second is whether to restore any of the governor's program cuts that you previously approved as requested when you heard the bill earlier. And the third is whether to provide funding for the expansion of the community, Columbia Gorge Community College District under SB 466. I put this sheet together before realizing that the committee was going to defer action on it, was going to not do that. So apparently the decision now is between those top two goals. If you turn page over, blue page over, from the back.
Excuse me, Steve.
Sure.
You know, those three options you gave us, the third bullet, why you know, we have the opportunity to appropriate the evil with that amount of money.
That is correct. That is what Senate Bill 466 does.
Right.
So you still have that on your agenda today, and you could go back into that bill if you wanted to do that. Page 2 are on the back of the sheet. LFO is suggesting the following work plan to help you to make your decision. The first is to consider the request to fund the community, Columbia Gorge Community College District annexation of Hood River County and SG 466. We estimate the fiscal impact of that to be $946,000 general fund. At the same time, we suggest you consider restorations to the cuts in the governor's recommended budget. The co-chairs have indicated that no more than $6.4 million out of that total of $45 million may be applied to restore these cuts. You are under no obligation to restore any of these cuts. However, you may choose to use up to $6.4 million to restore the cuts in any manner, as you see in that box there. These are the six programs that were cut that we're referring to. There's a total of roughly $12.7 million in cuts, and up to $6.4 million can be used to restore any of these in any degree. You don't have to do all of them, you can do one of them, you can spread it out, it's up to you. The remaining funds that would then be left would be available for the student-based funding or enrollment growth package. What the math turns out is that this would allow between $37.6 million to $45 million for this package. That's to say, if you decide not to put any funds in for Senate Bill 466 and you decide not to restore any of these cuts, then clearly there will be $46 million available for student-based funding. On the other hand, if you decide to fund Senate Bill 466 and you decide to use the full $6.4 million available to restore cuts, that would leave you with $37.6 million remaining for the enrollment growth package. And any number in between those two is also possible, given the extent to which you choose to make decisions related to funding restoration. We then have three, really two additional things we ask you to do after you make those decisions is to consider a set of proposed budget notes, which are also available in your packet, and you can look at those at the time that you want to consider certain additional funding adjustments that LFO is recommending. These are of a technical nature, but we do recommend that you consider them before your final action, which would be to report to Bill Bass for the full wings in the committee.
Thank you, Steve. Members, I have in my hand here from the Oregon Community College Association signatures of the presidents, and we don't have copies from them because I just now got it, but let me say, read to you what they say. Dear Chair Hartman and members of the committee, we, the undersigned presidents of Oregon's community colleges, are writing to inform you that all 17 community colleges in Oregon support the $45 million enrollment growth package proposed in HB 5051. We understand that there are other funding proposals that would divert part of the $45 million for items such as regional partnerships, community college skill centers, Oregon Advanced Technology Center, Sabin Center, and Hood River Annexation. We do not support using the enrollment growth money for these programs or any other programs. Our legislators asked us to speak with one voice to declare our priorities for the Oregon Community Colleges. It is our opinion that enrollment growth funding should be the first priority given the limited resources available in this budget climate. We hope we can count on your support of this package and that you will oppose using $45 million for anything beyond enrollment growth. Is there discussion on that, Mayor? Comment? Okay, so Steve, let us proceed on our work plan here. And as you just heard, I think the consensus is, maybe I better ask, is the consensus of the committee, the majority of the committee, with the $45 million in the okay. Yes.
I believe that we made that commitment early in the session, and we also made that commitment in the last session. Those of us who were here, and I believe we should keep the commitment that we made to the community colleges.
I agree, because the $45 million is just part of what they really felt they needed. I think it's 78 or something, and I feel the same way.
Senator, so, just an additional comment.
Yes,
So as far as Senate Bill 466, the $942 million you're seeking would be
$2,000. Maybe as easily reached as the $1,000.
Yeah. In this budgetary climate, I'm not going to make the difference. Anyway, thank you for that. That would be outside, and also the $6.4 million restoration package would be from other sources beyond the $45 million, and I do support that. I think we owe it to our community colleges to disperse the money how they see fit. And thank you very much.
Yes, sir, you're sure. I just think that we are making a choice, and I can agree with the choice we're making, but it does mean that there will not be money for doing all those things. Realistically, I think you are correct. Yes, so let's say...
That is not to say that the other items are not critical.
No.
We do believe that all of them deserve our support. But I also know that we made a commitment and a complete community colleges are unified in the design, and I think we should have a recommendation of 45.
So, Steve, your most session, what kind of emotion do you need? I see you're not going to recommend.
We have no recommendation on Senate Bill 466.
We could move this first option, which is student-based funding enrollment growth of $45 million. Sure, I move that. Yes, Senator Shull moves one of our first options, and that is to utilize the full $45 million in the student-based funding enrollment growth. Is there any discussion? Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just ask Steve, were there certain additional funding adjustments recommended by LFO that you wanted to share with us?
Yes, and I would be happy to do that.
Can you do it after the vote?
Yeah, after we have a vote on this, please. Further discussion on the motion. Everyone, yes, Representative.
Quick comment, sir. I think this is a very important motion, and for several reasons. One, it does keep faith with the community colleges, and I also appreciate the faith they've kept in staying together on this. And I have a couple of projects not going to get funded this time as a result of this, and I think we all are probably in that boat, and I think it shows hopefully that this legislature is exercising some responsibility, and likewise so is our partners out there, and I really appreciate that, and I look forward to that same sort of partnership in the other budgets that were coming ahead of us, and you're setting a great standard to which I hope many other agencies are willing to adhere to, and wish you all the best.
But I'd like to add to that, I mean, this is really great to have all 17 of the colleges agreeing on budget. I'll tell you, it's been very frustrating. I've been chairman of the Senate Education Committee the last three sessions and try to deal with half a dozen different opinions from the 17 colleges is very frustrating. But this is great. Is there further discussion on the motion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, hearing no objection, so ordered. We have committed the $45 million to the student-based funding enrollment growth. And let's see, regarding that. I usually clear the hall if there's any booing or shouting or clapping. But this is okay. Let's see, what else do we need to do then?
Mr. Chair, I would ask the subcommittee to consider some budget notes that various members have written. Ms. Packer, Ms. Real, part of the blue sheet on top, about halfway through, you'll find a one-page sheet that says supporting the community colleges and workforce development proposed budget notes. And there are five budget notes that are on that sheet. Has everyone found it?
Okay.
Sure.
Yeah.
Have these been worked out so that the community colleges know what these things say? All of them. I mean, is this a surprise? That was the first time I think I've seen the budget notes.
Yes, yeah, it's for me too, Ben.
It is for me. All the other folks out here have seen them.
I've seen.
Let's work these, and we don't necessarily have to adopt them if the committee does not choose to do that. But Steve will proceed.
The first of these is actually a budget note that you previously approved, which I don't believe you need to take action on again unless you want to reverse your earlier decision. But I listed it here just for so you have a complete list of all budget notes that are being considered. That was a budget note that the department would work with the employment department and with the workforce-related programs of the Department of Human Services to coordinate and prioritize workforce-related services with particular attention to placement, training, and job retention services.
Sure.
Yes.
Sure. Is it possible to bring community college key players who are involved with these to the table so that we can have...
Yes, I'd like to do that. So, Pam or whoever else, and as the company's budget notes, if you could, whoever's responsible in that area, come to testify. I'd appreciate it. So, Pam, would you like to comment on the first number one? I see you've already approved that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is it workable, Cam, and are you comfortable with it?
For the record, Cam Price, Fellow Commissioner of Community College and Workforce Development. Mr. Chair, Senator Trope. Yes, it is workable. So if you've been approved, we're already making a plan.
Okay. That's the only one of these budget notes that we have approved, I believe. So, thank you. Any other questions for me about this? Okay, let's go to number two, performance measures.
This is a budget note that would indicate performance measures that are expected for community colleges. If I may just read, would you like to read it? Community colleges are expected to serve 189,190 full-time equivalent students in 2001-03 biennium, approximately 10,500 more than in 1999-01. Distance education programs are projected to serve 100,000 students. That's not an FTE basis, it's just a headcount, but 100,000 students, a 33% increase over the prior biennium. The ethnic distribution of community college students will reflect
to prioritize workforce-related services with particular attention to placement, training, and job retention services.
Sure. Yes, then so it's possible to bring the community college key players who are involved with these to the table so that we can ask.
Yes, I'd like to do that. So Sam or whoever else, and having some of the best notes that you could be able to respond to that in that area. Yes, so I appreciate it. So Sam, would you like to comment on the first number one? We actually have already approved that. Yeah. Okay.
Is it workable for him and be comfortable with it?
For the record, Sam Price, Fire Commission, Student Policy and Workforce Development, Mr. Chair, Senator Trump. Yes, it is. She's already been approved. We're already making the plan.
Okay. That's the only one of the budget notes that we have approved, I believe. So, thank you. Yeah. Any other questions for Sam about this? Okay, let's go to number two, performance measures.
This is a budget note that would indicate performance measures that are expected for community colleges. If I may just read, would you like to read it? Community colleges are expected to serve 189,190 full-time equivalent students in 2001-03 biennium, approximately 10,500 more than in 1999-01. Distance education programs are projected to serve 100,000 students. That's not an FTE, but it's just a headcount. But 100,000 students, a 33% increase over the prior biennium. The ethnic distribution of community college students will reflect the ethnic distribution of the population of the state as a whole. Community college transfer students in the state's public university system will, on average, continue to perform as well in terms of grade point average as other university students in that system, specifically the ones who didn't come through the community college system. The percentage of students who pass professional licensure and certification exam after attending a community college will improve. And the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development shall prepare a report on these performance measures in its budget presentation to the 72nd Legislative Assembly. This particular budget note was requested by the Representative Slater asking to work with the community colleges to come up with a budget note that would reflect their performance measures, and this language is primarily what they have proposed with some changes. And they have looked at this, so I'd actually be able to comment whether or not this would be really
moving. George, go.
Some of it I think is fine, probably they've approved it. Some of it may be subject to simple change by a certain thing, but the ethnic distribution will reflect the ethnic distribution of the population as a whole. Suppose you do better than the population whole, you have a lot more. Well, that's great, I presume, but you don't say that the goal is to have a lot more than the population of the state. suppose you have less, what does that mean? If you made a real effort and you still got less, it's nice to have a goal, I guess, but it seems unwise to have that big amount of chance to cancel one, and I don't think you have much direct control over it, so should you be held accountable for that, that's a problem. And maybe for some of the others as well. If we understand these things are aspirations and we really are trying to handle some problems listing these things, not that they're kind of ironclad, if you don't do this, for instance, the 33% that are supposed to be in distance education, you make every effort and you come up with 25% rather than 33%, you're not going to say, you know, you paid, so you just hope you make a better effort and so forth. And then the question is distance education better than on-the-spot education for some things? It's probably not for some things, and probably just as good for other things. So I guess we just have to be careful about how we do that.
Thank you, Senator. Yes, Senator Schroeder?
Just comment, I didn't pick or choose these myself, and I got to look at them last night, and they look fine to me, and I agree with Senator Coe's interpretation that these are the beginning of performance, you know, outcomes, a chance to see if this stacks up, and then stacks up, no harm, no foul, we get to reevaluate. At least it starts to go down the track with these new colleges just to see what's going on. If I may also, I had asked the community colleges, where would you spend the $45 million? How would you spend it? And they were very, very nice. Every college contributed to a small report that I got that part of, you know, the record. So the next legislature and the next group of community college presidents, because there are many, unfortunately, that are retiring, but many good ones, I'm sure, coming on board, to kind of track along with where the money went, how things went, make it report to us that, well, you know, we needed more in certain other areas, and I'm fine with that. So I really appreciate without this efficiency coming forward. On my rural roots here.
You forgot that shoe and horses on that.
Don't mind me.
The agency's done a very fine job, and I appreciate that, and hope it works out.
I would react this way to that and say that I think it's good to think about how you're going to use the money, so I think it's good that they've done it. I think also, though, it's very important for us to realize that they may not be able to use it exactly that way because they are going to have to adjust to circumstances. And circumstances of Americans are never terribly predictable. But so I don't think we should expect when they come back that they spend every penny exactly that way because they need some flexibility.
Okay. And I might add to what Senator Phillips said, I think we have put bribery protection together on $45 million, and basically a lump sum with millions of criteria. But I think that's really good. And as Professor Schroeder said, you know, these various accountability is available, and so I think that provides that kind of comments from the industry.
These comments, this is not providing the flexibility, and you know, hopefully that the federal government gets the same update to do more flexibility with the funds that they send as well. And at the same time, I think we recognize that even the flexibility, there still has to be accountability, and you know, recognizing that mechanisms on taking care of the ship that go on in the room, that the accountability is a part of that. And I see the associations, but they have to limit that to us.
I think I see that. Has that been distributed?
This book is known.
Oh, there it is.
And I agree with him that we've got two more important education budgets ahead of us. And Representative Schroeder says, and it's kind of correct that this material we have represents each one of the 17 community colleges that forecast representing. Yeah, and you've looked at this and comfortable with it, have you?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, as we prepared it at the request of Representative Herbert, to try to give a snapshot of how much resource from the $45 million each college would receive and how they might spend it. And I do appreciate the conversation this morning about ensuring that there is flexibility since the economy has changed even since we put this together, but certainly since we started this dialogue in January.
I just want to make sure that this is on the record that you are familiar with these. I do have a caveat on each one of them that gives you lots of flexibility. This is our best estimate of how so we're not going to be able to mirror you on anything. And that's fine.
Mr. Chair, we do have now 7 new presidents coming in. And because it would be difficult to hold them accountable for our point today.
And so, members, if you would, in your scrutiny, if you're having a big problem, then get the right staff to move in from your schedule and for Friday and Saturday and the Tuesday, if there's any problems. I just glanced at it, and it looked good. I just find them, thank you again for being able to be in.
Somebody will be leaving this process, as a number of us will be leaving the process after this session. Something I've learned over time is that it's really difficult for the legislature to make a move. It should be up and off the spot every day.
Any other comments about the impact of state funding on community college performance colleges? Summary of all colleges and then a breakdown on each college. Any questions about that? If not, we will enter it into the record. And so, let's see, what I should do about this. Okay. Steve, rapid screen for healthcare
professionals. I'm going to ask for a clarification. Has the subcommittee taken a decision on the public member?
The rest of the table moves that this committee approved the performance major presentation on the proposed budget needs. Any other discussion? Any objections? Not so early. Rapid change for healthcare professionals.
Mr. Chair, members, the next budget was requested. Representative Patrick requested that the subcommittee consider this budget now to the state of. Subcommittee is concerned about the impact that the shortage of qualified health professionals has on the state. We strongly encourage the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development to promote the funds from Title I-B of the Federal Workforce Investment Act programs that train healthcare professionals, and especially programs designed to expedite training and to accommodate student work schedules.
Sure. Yes, sir. So, sort of understood from what I heard that you sort of backed away from what I'm
saying. Mr. Chair?
You represent us, sir.
I do not believe you backed away from one thing whatsoever.
Excuse me, sir, can we find Representative Patrick and ask him to come here and get over to number 4 of the question? But continue with your remarks, sir.
And what is the funding, the amount of funding for that? Is there a amount of funding? I thought it was a million. How much?
About a million, I understand.
I didn't think it would be a million, too.
Also, you had originally just changed the language that you requested the subcommittee to consider. Originally, that was correct, but this does not identify any dollar amount. It does not direct the department to do this. It just encourages the department to do that.
Okay, let's move to number 4 of the student aid report.
This was a question that was requested by Representative Schrader, and it states that the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development shall provide support and financial assistance to the Oregon Student Assistance Commission in preparing a report on the impact of student financial aid on student attendance and persistence. working toward establishing guidelines for maximizing the impact of state and system financial aid programs on student attendance and persistence. I believe that it would be fine to mention them in their own
research. I think it would be nice to have some idea of what it's going to cost. Do you have any idea? It's fairly simple. They'll provide support and financial assistance. So it's going to cost something.
I think us as a legislative body has shown huge faith and support in allocating the dollars we want. I think our students need to be made aware in council or in the checks are given for them. I'm just made aware that the state supports our community colleges are receiving still in the step that they can not reduce tuition. And making their education affordable.
So thank you, Rob, for representing the package. Did you come to testify and sign? And we are considering proposed budget notes. And number three is rapid change for healthcare professionals. Do you have that in front of you?
Thank you.
And do you have the edit?
I have.
And do you agree with that? Is that a good proposal?
I agree with
that. Thank you. Goodbye.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for bringing me over from my e-government committee. I'm State Representative Rob Patton from Medford. I brought this rapid turn for healthcare professionals subject matter to the committee for the particular reason that I think we are in a stage in Oregon and nationally that we are having boomers retire. You know that one of the largest costs, since you are all on a budget committee, and state in government has been the rising cost of our ability to provide health insurance as well as our employees. 70% of healthcare costs are related to employment costs, the workforce that is out there, the people that are out there. Also, we've heard time and time again, as the good chair of the Human Services Subcommittee, as well as the good representative from Candy, know that there is a substantial shortage in healthcare professionals, and there is a substantial need for healthcare professionals, and that need is only going to become more acute as our population continues to age, and especially in the fact that Oregon is aging quicker than other parts of the country, and we are having a lot of people move in. So consequently, we don't have a state policy necessarily, I believe, on healthcare and trying to comprehensively look at where we're spending state dollars to train healthcare, to train the healthcare professionals we need. The task force bill that we passed out of the House, which is in the Senate, currently, which I hope will address some of those issues in a comprehensive way, but still, right now, we know we have an acute problem and need for healthcare professionals to properly train healthcare professionals. I think from that this needs to be put on notice. The community colleges have been effective from their train your children. You do not want to take away from the increase in budget, whatever you have to do for them. I don't know if you voted on which I'm very happy to see. But by the same token, some of these workforce training dollars need to be allocated and need to look at rapid training programs. Currently, in community colleges, so I think that there has been some effort. I think there needs to be focus and effort, and it is not up to the president, though, on programs that train these healthcare workers in effective and rapid training methods, especially for programs like LPN, RN, and CNA. For example, a certified nurses assistant at CNA, which has substantial shortages. We have a substantial shortage statewide, but instead of training them over the course of a semester, then they're going to come out and just make minimum wage. It is much better for the worker and the individual, I believe, as well as our healthcare system and state policy to train them in a cost-effective, rapid manner over an 8-12-week program.
I do want to know, though, about one part of the budget, and that's the part in about the middle of it, which says, with funds from Title I, the Federal Workforce Investment Act, and does that act allow this? Is it possible to do it under that act? Is there any suggestion from Jeff or anybody else that it's not possible to do? And why is it that they're not already doing it?
Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, there was about $3 million, I believe, allocated for this particular Federal Workforce Investment Act that was received through the federal government. I understand, and I cannot claim my good knowledge of the particular act and in consultation with the good LFO staff, as well as working with the Community Colleges Association, if money is appropriate to be used in this particular manner. I initially asked that we carve a portion of that money out, the picture disagrees with me, so consequently, the budget notes got watered down to this particular piece. I would have liked to have seen $1 million set aside for these health care programs so we could actually have some sort of state policy statement. And we all know how we could show we put $1 million for the same health care questions in order to keep the cost of health care lower and provide for our seniors and our community. Unfortunately, such as we just need to sign that because we could get that to get offer up. I think I started out with the general fund, then I talked to the community college about the $45 million. They didn't want to do that, and I wasn't willing to put that burden on them. Consequently, we wound up with these funds, and then we wound up with nothing. You don't kind of know how that works.
They use these funds completely, and so if they do what they want to do with some of the funds, they won't do something else.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, there is no mandate that they have to do this. It's just what they consider, and you have to push there should be some emphasis placed upon this when receiving those funds, and they wouldn't do this in the absence of other items. But I think that if you look at the Employment Department survey on the need statewide, I think you should be convinced that healthcare professional training statewide, county by county, is a substantial need, and at least in the hospital for every county across the state.
And we'd be willing to send down the fund if we had more.
I'm hoping that Representative Trader will come up with more general.
But not for change in ministry.
Either there's a vet school or something that he's working on.
Rob, how does this fall in with the OHSU thing of ministry? I certainly do want to hear shortly. So for some reason, there's some collaboration with partnering with community college and OHSU, the federal funds, to do this initiative.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I have substantial concerns with where we're at with this training statewide. I don't know if OHSU could even utilize any of these funds. And Mr. Benson maybe answer that, but I think that it is probably more appropriate we should get more people into the workforce in a quicker manner by using our community college system. We are in training programs, or 2-year programs, as opposed to the 4-year programs that are available to Oregon Health Sciences University. I'm not going to debate the efficacy of which programs are more effective there, but I know that there's a lot of CNAs, LPNs, and other healthcare professionals, as well as RNs in community colleges. But I am concerned that in this subject software, there's an issue that there is an emphasis on training healthcare professionals because of the money that's set out of Oregon Health Sciences University, based on the as well as middle offices, particularly here. So I know the community colleges has proved my willing about this particular question. So, and I appreciate the fact that the community college about
it. Steve, can you gather the information you heard my question? What is the overcheck you doing in terms of the shortage of qualified healthcare professionals and the way you do it? How do you do it? How do you do it? How do you do it?
I believe there are enough industry uniforms, but I don't know if there are. Operate many of these programs.
Are there more funds available than you?
Well, I think I heard the representative say that these funds are being used for many kind of things to see it get around to learn the codes of
that's correct.
I'd like to have a motion that you approve the various budget notes.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just go back and vote in the other committee.
Yeah, there you go. Vote right and often. Yes, Sam. You heard the conversation and the questions. Could you enlighten us about where these titles one of these funds have been used and what does it do? What do these budgets might do if anything?
For the record, Tom Close, sorry. Mr. Chair, Senator Crowe, we have been working with our local staff on this budget note, and it had previously dedicated some money. What I can tell you is that we have, as Westman and Patrick said, set aside some of the Title I workforce dollars to invest in some programs. Approximately 600,000 of that this year went to health care. And so it is an allowable use. One of the projects we are funding is at OHSU. I can't tell you exactly what allied health professional is in, but it's a partnership between OHSU, DC, and a local workforce provider from the Portland Metro area. So, all I think is questions.
Just trying to throw a name.
Not really. Well, you know, it's probably the same question. Can you say the 10,000 more allocated to health care, but what is it rapid funding? It is a separate thing now. Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, we are discovering that part of the reason for this funding is to discover new and better ways to deliver that training. This budget note says look harder, look longer. and Mr. Anderson, if I could. Okay, thank you. I'm satisfied.
Okay. My are you comfortable with this workforce budget now? If you continue to do what you have been doing, are you satisfied with the budget now?
Mr. Chair, Senator Crowe, I believe so, yes.
Okay, question is finished, okay?
Well, thank you. Sam, and I would like a motion for this committee to approve the budget note, rapid training for healthcare professionals.
Representative Smith has made that motion. Is there any objection? So, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I certainly supported that regular and the rest of them. I guess I do want to hope that the community college system realizes, as I know they do, that there are other areas that are in dire need. For instance, education. And I commend them because I know, even looking at the last recommendation here in regard to Hispanic language for education, those two taken together are critical. And I know Chemeketa Community College, for one, has already addressed that. So I think going on with some of the film is ensuring nothing gets left out as we do more and more things. But I encourage a continued emphasis on educational areas too, with teachers and such.
Okay. Other comments on that budget? If not, let's move to the number 4, fifth, student aid report. If we had all the discussion, I need to
Mr. Chair, I think my comments fell on deaf ears on this. That's been Kathy's channel.
Say it again.
Okay, thank you. Regarding financial aid, student attendance, persistence, and performance, I think that's a very important area we should be emphasizing. The state legislature has, in good faith, given the community colleges what they asked for. In return, I think our students need to have a work ethic emphasized somehow in their studies. Performance on their part is also very important. They need to attend classes. They need to do the work. And I can remember when I was 18, went to Mountain Community College from big to the town of Gresham from the small farm in Moala, and out there right off the terminal there. I received a scholarship at that point. And when I was given that scholarship, it was made known to me that Madam, you will be attending your class, and you will not skip your class. And this was expected of you. And that was in 1975. Now, I don't know what's going on since then. I have seen things have changed. I know our ethics have changed since then. And believe me, I attended my class.
Number 4, assist the student aid report. Have we had all the discussion we need on
Mr. Chair, I think my comments fell on deaf ears as President Passage came up.
Say it again.
Okay, thank you. Regarding financial aid, student attendance, persistence, and performance, I think that's a very important area we should be emphasizing. The state legislature has, in good faith, given the community colleges what they asked for. In return, I think our students need to have a work ethic emphasized somehow in their studies. Performance on their part is also very important. They need to attend classes. They need to do the work. And I can remember when I was 18, went to Navajo Community College from the big town of Gresham from a small farm in Moala, man, ourselves right off the turnip truck. I received a scholarship at that point. And when I was given that scholarship, it was made known to me that, Madam, you will be attending your classes. You will not skip your classes. And this is expected of you. And that was in 1975. Now, I don't know what's going on since then. I assume things have changed. I know our ethics have changed since then. And believe me, I attended my classes. And I think that is the utmost important. And I would like to see, if not, it's currently going on. I don't know. But when these checks are passed out to our students, especially the ones who are in greatest need that we hear so much about, I expect and, if not, demand from them performance on their part. This is not a free ride from government. And I would be very interested in the report back on that. Next biennium of what our students are doing, what their grade point averages are, and I would even so far as to say how many classes they've attended, and I know that college professors don't take attendance anymore, so how are you going to give me that information?
correct?
Are you addressing the question?
Well, I think I'll address the question now. If college professors are no longer taking attendance in class, how do we know what their performance is?
Come back to the table, please. Identify yourself, and you heard your representative's question.
For the record, Counselor Sproul. Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, I just attended the class at Chemeketa Maple Grove every time. I was not receiving financial aid, but but I paid my own money. I was coming to the class.
And I think that they need to have some ownership in this, and I don't know what policies are being conducted at all 17 community colleges, but in order to study a performance goal, I would think you'd have to have some quantitative data, and that comes from attendance records.
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, my aide here was whispering in my ear that with financial aid are two priorities. One is the ability to benefit, and two is academic progress, or the financial aid is rescinded. So I think that this student aid report should bring back to you the information that you seek, and I don't think it's appropriate that I speak off the cuff on my own experience, but I think your points are well made, and I think we will prove them out. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any other questions for Pam? If not, Representative Smith moves that item number 4, assist with student aid report, that this committee accepts that budget note. Is there any objection or discussion? Seeing none, so ordered. Number 5, Spanish language competent teachers.
Mr. Chair, the last budget note was requested by Representative Winters to deal with the shortage of teachers who are competent in Spanish. The subcommittee notes the shortage of Spanish language competent teachers in the state and requests the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development to work with the Department of Education to develop and support programs designed to prepare native Spanish language speakers for teaching careers in the state public school system.
I would like to see this amended slightly, because I like the idea, but it seems to me that the university system ought to be involved in this as well.
I would graciously accept. I was thinking that when we were talking that the university system should also be included, and I would accept the amendment.
Is there any objection to the including the OUS being none? So ordered, please. As it reads, what do you say?
I would add Oregon University System after Department of Education on the third line. Okay. So I would direct the department to work with the Department of Education and the Oregon.
That's accurate. Okay, thank you. The question is closed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not opposed to this budget note, but I would, for the record, just like to make a couple of comments. I would hope that the intent of these teachers would be to assist the Spanish-speaking students to learn English, and that the intent would not be to teach the curriculum in two different languages. And this comes out of the debate in California over the bilingual education there, where members of the Hispanic community were saying, you know, for our children to go to law school, for our children to go to med school, they have to have a command of English language, and we don't want them never learning a language well enough to be able to get the high-paying jobs and the high achievement. So I would hope that the intent here would be to assist those students to learn them. Thank you.
Any other discussion?
Yes. I just want to add one comment. We heard testimony from the community college, particularly when we talked about the Workforce Investment Act, and we talked about the population who requires retraining and training. And if I recall the testimony, there was the large Hispanic group that would need reduction. And it seemed to me that we have a natural resource within our communities. And to encourage that natural resource to stay, we were also talking about, if I recall, we delayed some language issues in this building and in Department of Ed because we don't have that resource base. So my intent was to put the two of them together, so we do have a huge population of individuals that we should be encouraging them to go into the
the teaching field and get both the language as well as the individual to have this mind in form of bringing this forward and encouraging our system to really do a little more due diligence in this particular area.
I would like to comment just briefly about this. I think that this is good, and I think we want Spanish language competent teachers, and I would hope that they would teach both. They would teach both English and Spanish, because the kids that know Spanish want to know Spanish better, just as we teach English to our elementary kids all along. We ought to teach them also to the Spanish-speaking kids English, but we also, if we can, help them improve their Spanish. We're really concentrating on getting our English-speaking kids to have a foreign language. Let's have these Spanish-speaking kids know their own language well, plus English. Know it well, too.
And I concur with Senator Cho. One of the things I'm fond of saying is that we're one of the few industrialized nations that do not encourage our children to know more than one language. You can go to other countries and they're multilingual. And I say when I go to St. Martin, they speak four languages. And we're still debating the issue of one, so I concur that we should be able to do both.
Okay, Representative Winters moves that we accept the budget note, Spanish language competent teachers. Is there any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. And members, please stick with me. I hope to cast this out. We have some other things to do. Lord, Steve?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That concludes the budget note, but I have been asked by the co-chairs on their behalf to comment about an additional budget note that they had, that they were going to ask you to consider, which would have stated that community colleges shall fund their 2001-03 biennium enrollment with the funding provided in this and any other bills passed by the Legislative Assembly this session. It is expected that the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development will not seek additional funds from the Emergency Board during the legislative interim for enrollment-related costs. The co-chairs decided not to ask you to, you know, vote and to approve that language, but they did want to make it clear that they do see this as funding the enrollment that community colleges will have during the biennium, and that they would not be likely to entertain requests to the Emergency Board for additional enrollment.
Good. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, co-chairs, and we're watching. I also know that you know, co-chairs, that they will come to the E-Board regardless of that. Anything else?
Mr. Chair, yes. There are two very quick items I would ask the subcommittee to consider prior to taking final action on this bill. In the packet of materials that you originally got, there is an item, a one-page memo to you, the second to the last thing in that pile, dated today's with today's date, which contains two additional recommendations. But before doing that, I would ask, for just so that there's no ambiguity, that the subcommittee essentially reapprove the decisions that you made on March 8th. The reason why I'm asking you to do that is because since that was a different bill that was being considered at the time, I think just to make it clear for the record that you are again adopting those decisions that you made. Those were actually the budget decisions. And I attached the March 8th memo, which you approved earlier, if there are any questions about that. And there's no reason not to, nothing has changed that would change those recommendations.
Chair, I move that we adopt those recommendations.
Okay, Representative Schrader has already moved that, thank you.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
I mean, now while you were talking, so that's fine. And with the assurance, Steve, that there's nothing that we did on March 8th is in conflict with what we are doing today.
Okay. What we did today is simply
is there any objection to taking LFO's recommendation on reconfirming our March 8th action?
Seeing none, so ordered.
Then there remains two additional recommendations. We recommend that you take the following adjustments to the budget. Co-chairs have requested that funding for out-of-state travel be reduced by 1% in all agencies. This was not done earlier because this request came after you had your last meeting on March 8th. What this would equate to is a $146 general fund reduction, a $136 other funds reduction, and a $1,064 federal funds reduction. LFO recommends approval of these
things. And I move that we approve LFO's recommendation on the program reduction for the out-of-state travel.
Right. Representative Winters moves that we accept the approved LFO's recommendation. That would be number one on the program reductions relating to out-of-state travel. Are there any objections?
I'm not going to object, but I just want to know, is this, does this come as a complete surprise, or do they know about it?
They know.
Do you have any objection? So ordered.
The final LFO recommendation is that you increase the federal funds limitation by $7,425,000 to allow the agency to spend money from two grants that they are applying for, that you have approved letting them apply for. This limitation would be unscheduled pending award of the federal grant. So once the funding comes in, the staff will reschedule.
Mr. Chair, I move that we accept LFO's recommendation on additional federal funds limitations for the grants that we discussed not too long ago. In fact, I believe that was really the clarification.
Okay, Representative Winters has moved LFO recommendation number two regarding additional federal funds limitations for grants. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection?
Sure.
Okay, Representative Schrader.
I'd like to move House Bill 5051 with the budget notes we've approved and the adjustments that we've approved and the $45 million movement growth that we've approved to the Equal Means Community Administration.
Representative Schrader moves that we send House Bill 5051 will be passed recommendation to the full Ways and Means Committee with all of the adjustments that we have made to it. Is there any discussion? Any objection? If not, so ordered. Representative Schrader will take it to the floor in the House and I'll do the same. Is there any other business? Come, remember, tomorrow at 1:30 and Saturday at 1 o'clock, the subcommittee will meet. The
Friday at 1:30?
Friday at 1:30.
Don't we have session?
Yes, we have to excuse the board session. I mean,
Pam?
Sure.
And report to the governor and the legislative assembly. It occurs an emergency effective on taxes. There are draft two amendments that should be in your packet. I have just received the official on the draft two amendments that I have given representative copies, and I will pass out to you now. If you don't have draft two, I'll have to run the copy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3353 with the dash two amendments creates an interim task force on healthcare personnel. As people are aware, as the baby boomers are getting older and older, and as we have a more senior population moving into the state of Oregon, we're in the midst of a healthcare crisis in Oregon. Many of you, I'm sure this committee received the recent Northwest Health Foundation. Representative Mons Anderson isn't here, about Oregon's nursing shortage, a public health crisis in the making. We are short nurses, CNAs, and doctors, and many other healthcare professionals, especially in rural parts of Oregon, as well as the more populated parts of the state. In Medford, which I consider a urban setting at least, we have the same problems that much of rural Oregon is having. Consequently, we need to take a comprehensive look at healthcare employment in the state of Oregon and the availability of people to be involved in healthcare. We need to look at the licensing requirements,
where our, what kind of investment we are making as a public body in higher education and how we are tailoring that to increase the amount of healthcare personnel that are available throughout the state of Oregon. We need to look at scholarships and other incentives to train more healthcare personnel. We know that we are on the rising tide of a continuing crisis in healthcare. We need to tackle that problem. We need to tackle it in a comprehensive manner. That's why I put House Bill 3353 into the mix. I put the dash to amendments, include some other people to be appointed. It brings together higher ed and the providers as well as the as well as many of the professional organizations that are involved in healthcare. There are 18 people that would be on the interim task force that would then report back to the legislative body about recommendations. I sit on the budget committee that handles the employment department budget. Employment department is here today to testify. There's also a budget note in their budget. They feel that they can deal with this within their current budget structure. And I think in dealing with their particular budget, they realize that there's a problem with healthcare and healthcare staffing. As I told you before, I sit on the Human Services Budget Committee, and we know that there are some substantial issues in attracting healthcare personnel in innumerable fields. I'd ask this committee, there are always all kinds of members you tend to add. Why wasn't this person or that person included? We tried to be comprehensive in including the people that needed to be included. Once this bill gets moving, I'm happy to talk to other people. And if there are some individuals who, organizations that we missed that would contribute to the working group, I'm happy to help put some of those in on the Senate side. But due to the late nature of this hearing, I'd like to get things moving through the building and ask for your support on this piece of legislation. I think it's critical to Oregon's future that we align our public policy with the public need that we're going to see in the future of employment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I think this is a good bill. This is about the 10th task force to be out of this committee, and I guess I would be okay with this if we remove subsection 7 of section 1. Because these are all professional people, and I'm not sure that I would need to deal with the travel expenses and so forth, because they're all being employed and will be paid for that mileage by the group they represent.
Where is this?
On page 2 at subsection 7, which is the compensation section.
That's for members of the Oregon Legislative Assembly. There will be 2 senators and 2 representatives that will be sit on this task force.
At least of all, we should be paid.
Well, the compensation, the legislative per diem and things like this, this is, I anticipate this is going to be, this task force is going to have quite a bit of work to do. If you want to take out Section 7, take out Section 7, but I think as members of the Legislative Assembly, we contribute a lot to the body. By doing this, and typically I wouldn't want to prohibit some legislators from being able to serve on this task force because we couldn't reimburse them for their travel.
It's in the Section 7 deals with people who are not members of the legislative body and are not entitled to compensation, but may be reimbursed for actual and necessary costs.
Mm-hmm. Oh, excuse me, sorry.
By them in the performance of their duty subject to ORS. That's what
Excuse me, I read the section.
Well, it doesn't say they have to be reimbursed.
It doesn't say they could submit reimbursement if they wanted to. A lot of employers will pay for some of these things if they wanted to.
A lot of individuals pay.
We just had an issue, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we just had an issue about compensation for nurses who serve on the state nursing board. And we've upped our compensation because a lot of them aren't paid for by their employers.
Thank you. A different question. I noticed we went from a commission mostly appointed by the governor to a commission appointed by the speaker and the president. I have to admit that I'm sort of confused as to how these commissions generally get set up, and I'm wondering why we went from one to the other.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, no particular reason we went from one to the other. I wanted to have more legislative buy-in from members of the Legislative Assembly on this particular task force. There are many individuals who are members, you know, of the executive staff in terms of higher education and other things. But what I would like to just have some involvement. I see this being more legislative involvement rather than gubernatorial involvement at this particular point in time. And especially since our governor is term limited this next time, it would be nice to have those people involved with the Legislative Assembly.
I believe the Speaker of the House and the President and Senate are also term limited.
But hopefully the two legislators will not be.
Well, no guarantee. Well, that's true.
Everyone that.
And I would say, Representative, we're all term limited, but the Senate gives the required votes to come back.
Yeah. Anyone could have a constitutional problem.
Representative Barnhart.
Well, I noticed that the other piece, the only other piece that's added, if I understand this correctly, is the new Section 3. Maybe I should wait and let the Employment Department talk about that.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Brad Engel. I'm from the Oregon Employment Department's Research Section. I've handed out a letter from our Administrator, Rowena Crosley, detailing some of the points that I'll be talking about today. But essentially, the Employment Department doesn't take a position on the bill, but we stand ready to provide the support as described in the bill. We think this report fits well within the current role that the Employment Department plays. We're the designated Employment Statistics Agency under the Workforce Investment Act, and we are also Oregon's designated Occupational Information Coordinating Entity under federal legislation. Other examples along this lines include occupational employment statistics, projections, and wage information on hundreds of Oregon's occupations. These are typically the types of reports that we do. We currently have several special reports designated to be conducted throughout the year. We would consider this one to be a top priority among those and feel that it could be done within the current budget of the Oregon Employment Department. In our mind, we see our role as in three ways. First is primarily gathering and compilation and production of a study, a report, to present it to the task force. We see the task force as providing input and comments along the way, but also being responsible for the final recommendations that might come out of the task force. The research section of the Oregon Employment Department would provide the administrative support. Coordination of things and the like. Again, we believe that all of this can be done within our current budget, and we're ready and willing to take on prescribed roles and look forward to a cooperative agreement.
Any questions? If you're not.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any more questions? He's okay with the best for a moment. Never mind then. I'm going to close the public hearing on 3353, and I'm going to open a work session on 3353, Representative Morissette.
I would move the Act 2 amendments to 3353.
Representative Morissette moves the Act 2 amendments to 3353. Is there any discussion? Any objections?
Roll call, Mr. Chair.
The clerk call the roll.
I would move House Bill 3353 to the floor with the DPAP recommendation.
Mr. Chair, I think you should away from me.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have a subsequent call.
Yeah.
It is.
It's already been contemplated by the Labor Room Subcommittee in the Employment Department budget currently, and it's currently budget note, and employment, and it's under $50,000, so it shouldn't make sense.
Mr. Chairman, my intent was just to have Little Ways and Means let it go to the floor first and then do that later if it had to. But so I do recommend House Bill 3353 to the floor of the DPAC recommendation.
Representative Marshall moves House Bill 3353 as amended to the floor of the DPAC recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Yes, sir.
What kind of comment?
I'd just like to make one point, and that's maybe over on the Senate side this could happen. I think that OHSU School of Medicine should also be on this task force. The reason why is because since we do have a shortage of doctors, I think that it's up to OHSU compared to our School of Medicine to let us have a School of Nursing, but it doesn't have School of Medicine. And with the fact that we do have a shortage of physicians, I would like to know my own self why it is that OHSU is not admitting more Oregon students, and I'd also like to know why they have such a limited class. And if it's because they don't have enough money, then let's figure out how we can accommodate that.
Okay. Any other discussion? Seeing none, clerk, call the roll.
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye. House Bill 3353, having received your required majority, is declared passed. Carrier. Representative Popridge will carry. And I will close the work session on House Bill 3353.
Chairman, thank you for your
indulgence. You took up a whole morning, Representative.
I'll get out of here.
Close the door on your way out, Representative. Okay, colleagues, we are due on the floor at 10. Plus, I have a meeting in the governor's office in 10 minutes, and so I don't want to get into another bill at this point in time. So we will recess. We will be reconvening at 5 o'clock today.
Yes, that's a roll call vote on that motion, please.
Mm-hmm. On this motion?
Yes, must be recessed.
No,
there is not.
Okay. I can just declare it.
Well, it's a motion, and I ask for a roll call vote on it.
Representative, there was no motion.
There was a motion to recess, if I understand it.
No, I said we were going to recess. There was no motion.
You're going to recess without a motion to recess?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I want to let the chair know that I believe that's out of order when there's a request for a roll call on the motion.
Representative, there was no motion.
This is David Nelson, state senator from Pendleton, and this has been one of the loves of my legislative career has been the technology advancement and the throughout the state of Oregon. As I understand, those contracts have been signed in the last month, and those projects under round one and round two are going forward. My belief is these bills are a continuation of that project. Talks about technology transfer, and when I got involved in this process, I wasn't really quite sure what technology transfer meant, but it is really just the research and development, creation of ideas into products, and the allowance of those ideas and products to be brought forth for the benefit of not only the people of the state of Oregon, but also for the institutions. And it's truly a wondrous prospect. I think that's where the state of Oregon needs to go. There's been a lot of work done on that. This isn't the end of it. This is a step in those directions. And I think if you look at this as a continuation of starting in the last session, working in this session, and a continuation going into the next session, these are all one-step processes that we have to continue to look at the future and see where we're going to take the state of Oregon. We're in a new information age economy, and if we don't accept that fact, I think that the state is going to be the loser. I think the people will be the losers. We're financing our public services, our education, our healthcare services, and public safety of income tax dollars, so we're really only as good as our economy. And if we don't recognize the need for this technology and the technology transfer concept, I think we're going to be remiss. There's a lot more people in the back of the room that are much more smarter than I about this and understand these concepts. And so if there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer them from the committee. And I appreciate the opportunity and your consideration in giving me honor.
Thank you, Senator. Any questions for the Senator or comments? No, thank you very much. And Nelson, I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bills 101 and 102 and open up the possible reconsideration and work session on House Bill 5051. And I think I would like to, as you remember, members, we passed the community college budget out yesterday, the full $45 million to the growth and enrollment part. And I need to bring the bill back just to make sure everyone understands how the funding for the six skill centers and the Savings Skill Center fit into the $45 million. I do not expect to go to a work session, but I would like to bring the bill back, and without objection, I'd like to have the bill in front of us. I'd like to start with Representative, we have to go to another meeting shortly. Could you give us your thoughts on this, please?
Well, I just we get
sure, that'd be fine.
I just want to make sure, I guess, since there are more questions that were raised, I just want to make sure that, to my extent, that the community college has understood what we did, what I thought we did last time. All the committee agree that we know what we did. With my understanding that in the final determination on the $45 million, that we had a very good conversation and exchange, and that that $45 million was to be used as the community colleges wanted to use it. They presented documentation that there's certain things they had in mind that they wanted to use it for. We said that's great, would like to do that. We also talked about flexibility. The extent that the college presidents wanted to depart from that, that was fine. And if they wanted to or had felt a need to do some of the regional programs or some of the skill centers that were not included in our priority list for the $45 million, that would be fine, but we would not be requiring them to do the regional program or do the skill centers. They have another set of priorities that we acknowledged and accepted, and also acknowledgement that $45 million is it for the biennium, and there was a little discussion about not and perhaps encourage for welcome to come back to the e-board. That was my understanding, and I guess the extent that community college has a different understanding, I guess I wanted to
yes, that's very true.
Well, as I recall, our motion was that first option, as he presented it, which clearly said that $45 million went basically to take care of the enrollment problem. And then I thought, and we all agreed to that, and we voted for that, I think, unanimously. So it seems to me like that was the decision. I think then, as later, we talked about it, but then Schrader is correct that we did suggest that they did have some flexibility in terms of the way they used it, if they so chose, that it was up to them.
Okay. You're absolutely right, but I want to make it perfectly clear, at least in the minds of all of the committee, that what our intentions, what this committee's intentions are as far as the $45 million, how it's used by the community colleges, and what the status of the skill center. There's some misunderstanding about how this affected the savings center and the skill center. So I think you understand the question, and can you just speak to that, please?
For the record, Ken Close follows community colleges and workforce development. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I have been able to, after having conversation with LFO staff this morning, talked to all of the presidents that have skill centers on their campuses, and you have letters where they are going personally to speak to you about their commitment to the $45 million. Case in point would be the letter from Jerry Berger, the president of Shemeketa, that they have followed a process in the past year to incorporate the services of the skill center in their general operating budget. They intend to continue the service, and the letter really lays out how they went about including the community and their local board in that process, and that they stand committed behind the $45 million for enrollment growth and would waive, if I could say that, that any skill center dedication come out of that $45 million. Certainly not. There's several references in these letters too, and if you'd like to give us a little more, we would dedicate it to skill centers. But given that it is 45, the skill centers will be part and parcel of the service delivery out of community college.
Cam, does this have but tell me again how the Saban Skill Center relates to the 17 community colleges and their skill centers?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the Saban Skill Center is a distinct line item. The resources are dedicated by the legislature and moved directly to North Carolina School District for the funding of the Saban School Center, Saban Skill Center. There are partnerships with the local community colleges, Clackamas particularly, but as far as resources or other things changing hands, that doesn't happen. We don't dedicate any of the community college support funds to the Owen Saban Skill Center. It's a distinct categorical funding.
And the community colleges do not pay anything to the Saban Center for services or anything. There's no financial participation between a community college and the Saban Skill Center?
Mr. Chair, I'm not fully aware of all the particulars. There are people here from Clackamas Community College.
Yeah, could we have that person that could speak to that? Come up with, because that's really the main question.
He was. Come on in. Oh. I'm sorry.
Okay, yes,
thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a quick question.
Certainly.
What level student does the Saban Skill Center serve?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hobson, Owen Saban Skill Center serves high school students. When we had our full budget presentation, the representatives from the Skill Center were here, and the testimony was that it was primarily 11th and 12th, although there were some younger students, and they were primarily from the Clackamas School District, although there was a small percentage that came from outside the school district as well.
Is there any way then that the community college itself is involved in the program other than that it's been funded in a line item in the budget? Is the Clackamas Community College involved in that program?
I think the person maybe that wants to speak to that.
Yeah, David Dixon, associate dean at Clackamas Community College, and I was actually involved in the early years when the Advanced Technology Center became a specific appropriation. And at that time, I think, even though Saban is a separate program and is run through North Carolina School District, and they receive ADM and they're on a separate track, that was the best place that program. They were doing some exciting things, and the legislature felt that there was an opportunity to put them in with the Advanced Technology Centers for funding. And so it's been a little bit of an odd duck to be in there with the community colleges, but that's the way it's been for the last 8 to 10 years.
Any other questions? Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When that was initially done, perhaps you know, was that not set up as a pilot program?
I believe it was, and I think it was somewhat unique among the K-12 districts around the state. And I know they're doing some distance learning and a lot of very unique and creative things with vocational technology and vocational programs. And they've been a strong partner with Clackamas Community College and all of our training programs in the state and school. And they work with the other districts in Clackamas County to provide training for other students in the other school districts.
I believe that the Saban system is started during the old Peter years, which was a long, long time ago, as a pilot. That's been some how years ago.
Question, Mr. Chair. The Saban School Center has received any other funding besides this request to the charge tuition, or are there other local dollars that go into that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, they use the, and we'll remind the committee that there is $1 million in our current budget for the Olin Saban Skill Center. It is the only skill center that the governor did leave some resources in. The community college skill centers have been zero funded, but he did leave $1 million for Olin Saban. They do receive ADNW, and that's my knowledge. But the fund, the $1 million that's in this budget, helps buy down tuition for students so that it doesn't cost them any more to come to what I think of Olin Saban as a magnet school for the professional technical program.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Steve, would you report to us about the governor's budget? And I am assuming that's part of the budget we passed yesterday, is it not? How are we treating the Saban Skill Center in 5051?
In 5051, we approved the governor's recommendation for funding for the Saban Skill Center, which we $1,030,000 in funding for that center. It is a 62.5% cut from that current service level funding for the Saban Skill Center. Essentially, this is calculated as a cut in 50% of the state support for the first year of the biennium and phasing out to a 75% cut in state support the second year of the biennium. It's almost unfortunate in terms of the budget that the Saban Skill Center and the Community College Skill Center use the same because the community college skill centers, and there are six of these, are programs of specific community colleges that where the state has been providing extra funding in support of these programs above the regular first student distribution to the community college support fund. What the governor's budget did and what you approved was a 100% reduction in the additional funding for community college, six community college skill centers, as opposed to the Saban Skill Center, which is not a part of the community college, even though it's free.
Does the Saban Center get additional funding from the school district and get the state school support funding for those students?
The Saban Center does receive most of its support from the North Clackamas School District. I do apologize that I wasn't able to get the exact figures in time for this your work session today, but I believe that the state support level covers roughly a third to a little more than a third of the Saban Center's budget. And if there's someone here who knows more, please
support. Yes, Joe.
Good afternoon.
So tell us what that even there is from, and please repeat it, from the North Clackamas.
About one-third of our funding has come from the state for the last several years. And I just to echo what David has been saying, that it started several years ago, and we aligned because of our
work together, but also for political reasons, at a time when there was no money for any of the skill centers or for ours or theirs, and we worked together several sessions ago to start this funding, and since then it's always been in the governor's budget at full funding, at full support.
And so you don't, or how much do you get through your regular K through 12, but what's the dollar amount? How many FTEs do you have in the program? Approximately how many students?
There's 2,200 students that attend Sabin, plus another 100 across the state and 100 from throughout Clackamas County that come in from other school districts.
And I think the question was asked, those 100 from other school districts or from around the state, do they pay a tuition?
No.
They don't pay any tuition. And so the students, the 2,200 from North Clackamas, you receive from your the full funding, the ADNW?
Right.
Okay.
Right. We in North Clackamas, Sabin as if is a fourth high school, so to
speak. Okay.
And those students come from the other high schools to take advanced programming, advanced professional technical classes. Yes.
Recognition.
How long has the state been funding things?
I believe 5 sessions.
About 10 years, I
think.
So it's been up to date.
No. Sabin has been open since 1968. What the state funding has allowed Sabin to do is double in size and have the statewide program or have the distance learning program. It's the only high school distance learning program in the state.
Do they get property tax revenues? I mean, I don't realize that taking out ADMW, but is there another taxing district within this area for that?
In the same way that all districts get property tax.
For their facilities and so forth. Have they ever gone for a bond?
North Clackamas has gone for a bond.
For Sabin?
No, not for Sabin, but for facilities. We have used bond money to expand Sabin.
So has Sabin ever gone for a bond themselves? Or are they their own district?
They're not their own district. They're part of the North Clackamas.
Thank you.
Okay. Members, what I'd like to do, we don't have a quorum here now. I would like to close the work session, and we are meeting tomorrow at 1:30, and out of a courtesy to Senators Vern Duncan and Rick Metzger, I will take this up again tomorrow, but I am not prepared to accept a motion to do anything with it until hear from the two senators tomorrow. Is that okay with everybody?
Sure. It seems to me kind of inconvenient to have these people all who are interested come back and come back and come back. Where are the senators? Can't they come now?
They are planning.
They are
planning on being here.
Oh. Who did you ask for, Senator?
The two senators who are going to come tomorrow.
Yeah, they're in front of other. I still would like to just hold off on any action at all and carry this over until tomorrow. Is there any objection? Seeing none. We'll close the work session on 5052 and open up the public hearing and possible work session on Senate Bill 101A and 102A. And Senator Nelson was here earlier, and so who's in charge?
Yeah.
We don't have a sign-up list.
Yeah.
Oh, do we? Oh, we do have a sign-up list. So, but go ahead, John. Okay, you have in front of you a sheet on Senate Bill 101 and 102. This is the reason they did
it.
Learning parts of track that he can't get there, he doesn't know what to do with it yet. But, you know, I talked about this many members went up on the sheet. Okay, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed.
For the record, I'm Diane Bynes, Vice Chancellor for Corporate and Public Affairs for the Oregon University System. And with me is Bill Scott and some other people who would like to come forward after we finish. Let me talk about these as a group of technology transfer infrastructure bills. And we're just going to do a very quick presentation about why we believe this is important, these two bills. If you look on your handout we gave you, actually, in a knowledge-based economy, which of course we are in, new growth is really related to ideas, and economies really don't grow from just capital and more labor, but economies grow from ideas and the ability to do things, change the way we do things. We're hoping that we can do that with these two bills and as a package with the other three bills that have been considered. If you look on slide five, we tried to explain sort of what technology transfer in our sense, in this concept, means. We have basic research at Oregon University, generally federally funded. That's the usual way. Then the funding from the Technology Transfer Fund, which is 101, SB 101, those monies would go to campuses and to faculty and would help them look at those their research and find out if there are any ideas in that research that's commercializable that could actually benefit the Oregon economy. Then, of course, you have to protect that. You need intellectual property protection, patent rights. You need to also do a prototype beta testing on that to really be sure that you have to prove the concept to be sure that it really has commercial viability. That would all be done with the Technology Transfer Fund. Then the next is you need to create a business or develop a business around that idea. And we would be proposing to work with the Oregon Resource and Technology Development Account to do that, business creation and business development. And that funding is not here. We're not talking about that at this moment. Then venture capital comes in to take that idea even further, and you then create jobs and new companies. And that feeds back into the Oregon economy and to the basic research. In Oregon, compared to other states, and slide six gives you some information about this, as individual researchers, our research faculty are very competitive in their productivity and their ability to innovate. But if you go and look, and that's judged by the amount of research funding that they bring in, the amount of invention disclosures, things they come up with, and the number of patents per $100 million of research. If you look on the next slide, the problem is that licensing, which we've had the ability to take licenses in the past, is while we've done a fair amount of it and we're pretty competitive, licenses are not very remunerative, and so that is not the best way for the state or the campuses to get a return on that investment. And the revenue per license in our case has been low. And one of the reasons for that is that in our case in Oregon, most of those licenses have been granted to companies outside of the state because they need to be large companies to utilize the license process. And we rely on small companies and emerging growth companies in the state. So even if they did get commercialized, they got commercialized outside of the state, which meant that there wasn't any benefit back to the economy. So this is an attempt to try to correct that, get more of these ideas commercialized in Oregon. Our universities in Oregon have historically filed patents only on one out of every three or four discoveries. That's not good, obviously. We don't have the money to protect those ideas, and therefore they're either going back into the public domain or they're being commercialized by other people. We also have very few what Adrian Roberts called GUIs, which is the Government University Industry Partnership in technology transfer, and that's because we really haven't had the incentives to do this. In fact, we went 42nd out of all the states in GUI relationships in technology. in our neighboring state, Washington Technology Center and the University of Washington's Technology Office, they get a combined budget of annually of $6 million. Utah has gives about $2 million annually to the University for Tech Transfer activities. If you, all of this was, these ideas were generated by a group of private sector people and education leaders called the Economic Development Joint Boards Working Group. And just to refresh your memory, the SB 273 creates a council for knowledge and economic development that would sort of continue to encourage these kinds of links between higher education and economic development. That is passed and is going to the governor. H.R. 3968, which you're not looking at today, relates to the Oregon Resource and Technology Development Account that I mentioned earlier, would work with us to commercialize these ideas. And then SJR 17 was the constitutional amendment that will be referred to the voters in May of 2002 for their approval so that universities could hold stock and not just through licensing. Public universities and colleges could hold stock. The technology transfer account, which is 102, we see this as really an alternative model for equity until the constitutional amendment passes. And unfortunately, in the bill that you have in front of you, you don't have on the last page of that bill, it should say that if the voters approve the constitutional amendment this in the primary election of 2002, so May of 2002, this account would sunset because we feel that if the campuses could hold their stock directly, it would be a better way. But in the meantime, this is legal under the Education Endowment Fund. It's constitutionally accepted already, and this would allow campuses to commercialize their technologies with working with the Higher Education Technology Transfer Account. Then if you go on to the slide 15, that just describes the process that we'll use for the technology transfer account. That account will actually hold the equity on behalf of the campuses, but they would have an opportunity to advise the account on what would happen to those equities. SB 101 actually creates the Higher Education Technology Transfer Fund. And this actually provides dedicated funds and consistent funding to technology transfer activities. So that real early stage stuff is called the Valley of Death, and there's no money for it, and no investors want to put anything in it because it hasn't been proven that this idea is worth anything yet. So in order to do that, to protect it and then prove that it has some value, you need to have some funding in order to do that. And this explains how that would happen. We also sort of give you on slide 17 just some examples of technology transfer activities. Much of it is protecting that intellectual property and then proving that it's worth something and fixing it so that it is truly commercializable. If you look at slide 18,